Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 340th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined by my mythic grinding competitor, Allison. Allison, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I hit you with the Allison today instead of the Allie.
Am I in trouble?
You're not in trouble. Well, you've been playing Omnath, so you're fine. But I did see you play a non-Omnath deck for a little bit on stream. I'm going to assume that was your friends being a bad influence on you. So I'm gonna give you a chance. You know, you're an adult. I want you to make your own decisions. But just, hey, I don't like those people you're hanging out with. They're playing non-Omnath decks. So
I actually played a non-Omnath deck on stream yesterday, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking all about Omnath, Standard. Sorry, my bad. We're going to talk all about Standard today on this episode. It's going to be pretty fun. But first, the point of the show, if we're not getting better, we're getting worse. Talk about always improving. Allie, how'd you always improve this week?
So I assume everyone listening has realized that Zendikar Rising is out. And you can play with the cards on Arena, and I was just not expecting these, I called them flippy thingies. What are they actually called?
They're called pathways.
No, not just the pathway lands, like all of them, right?
Oh,
like
the DFCs.
Dual-faced modal cards, is that correct?
I think they're called DFCs because they're double-faced Zendikar cards because they're all lands is what people say, but I've just been calling them DFCs.
Yeah. Well, they're flippy thingies, and the flippy thingies are so much harder than I expected. I remember I was streaming the early access streamer event and hashtag sponsored by WotC. And it just like threw me off how hard it was to think about your land drops so much. Not even like the like spell land ones, like those seem a little easier to me of just like, oh, you need a land, play it as a land. Oh, you need the, like, obviously those are still kind of hard too, but I think the pathway lands have kind of changed a lot, especially it's changed a lot about how we think about Magic, especially when we're all trying to jam four color decks. It's like you need to plan your lands out like five turns in advance, and I'm not used to that. I know you're probably used to it with Amulet, Titan, and Modern, but like that's not a skill I have. So I've been like going to the rope, just like trying to decide what my turn one land drop is supposed to be.
Yeah, it matters a bunch. Like if you play the wrong, especially in like the Omnath decks, right, with the colors, like sometimes you need Spikefield Hazard to kill their Cobra. Sometimes you need to be a red. And those sort of things, like, drastically change the game. Like, it can't be undersold. It's so hard. But it is a skill, right? Like, it's a thing that with time, you'll get better at. And you'll get better at recognizing, like, the patterns. And, like, oh, like, most of the time I do it like this. And, you know, and you're looking for the things that make the exception. But, yeah, it's super challenging. I played a little bit with Tangle Florahedron. I think that's another example of a really challenging one where it's like, oh, I should really play this on turn one tap, but if I like top deck the land, I get to play this Questing Beast into this dragon like a turn ahead of schedule on the play and my opponent can never win. But if I don't, this next turn I have to play tap lane go. I guess I'll play it tap, and then you draw the land and you cry yourself to sleep at night, but you were going to anyways, so. But yeah, it's really, really hard.
Yeah, and yeah. Like you said, I think it is a really It gets easier, or you start to like understand the play patterns a bit more the more you do it. So, just keep thinking about those land drops to always improve.
Yep. Yeah, it's a lot like lifting weights, right? Like, you get a lot better at, like, doing, you know, push-ups and running and stuff, but you still build up a sweat. So, I believe in you, Allie. You can be MTG Flipland Fit. Hashtag.
Soon I'll be a Titan player.
Ooh! And then every set review we can talk about the card that maybe goes into Titan. There are so many this time. We could have had a whole podcast episode on it. What a time to be alive. Oh my goodness. There are a bunch that go into the deck, though. It's wild. My always improving moment was really trying to work on like what was the best way to be attacking the Omnath decks as Omnath in the first week. So I actually, when the set first hit, I actually didn't have any problems that much on Thursday. So I got in and got to Mythic. And I played mono black like the whole way, basically. I played like a game of cycling. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. All my Omnath opponents are like having trouble like interacting. I'm disrupting them just enough. And like, sure, they can, you know, pop off, but like, I'm going to make them do it. And then, like, after one day, their deck got slightly more tuned. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I was like, okay, that's pretty frustrating. I guess if their deck just slightly tuned, I can't win. I should probably get off this. And I started playing the Omnath deck that you actually sent me when we were talking, that you had like found on Twitter. And then from there, I just kind of like slowly iterated after talking to people. And yeah, it was just working on the process of like trying to adapt the deck day to day and like iterate on what's actually going on in the format. And trying to find like the points of interaction and think about what my opponent's going to do. Since I think that like a lot of the times you're looking for the deck for the week, right? And especially when the metagame's first evolving, you're almost looking at it for the day, right? And you're trying to just stay as ahead as you can without getting so far ahead that, like, what you're doing is bad against what they're currently doing. So, just that sort of thing. Like, I played 3 Terror of the Peaks and 2 Kenriths this past weekend because I wanted to be able to, like, have ways to use my mana and dodge red cap melees, but still have a way to combo kill my opponent's self-ultimatum. And now I'm not sure if you should be so all in on Terror of the Peaks just because of like people are adapting a lot of deal 4 damage spells as their answer to Omnath and Cobra early, and then that makes it so your terrors are a little weaker. So
yeah.
And that was 2 days. 2 days.
Well, we also get to celebrate your said semifinals, right?
Yeah, I lost in 4th place in the standard challenge. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was great. Deck was super powerful. We'll talk about that more. It's just an Omnath deck. But yeah, this deck is quite strong. Who would guess all the mana and all the draw 5s would be powerful together? Not I, said the crab. But
Omnath is good.
Yeah, it's actually surprising how good it is. But I plan to talk about that a bit more when we get to that. But first, we have to shout out our sponsor, Allie, Oasis Games. You can go to oasisgames.com right now and buy your Omnomnaths and pick them up. Turns out they're actually quite good in Pioneer as well. I've seen some modern results, Allie, and I assume it's Historic All-Star. Like, I think it's actually probably just insane in Historic. I think Historic has taught me that we can build standard decks that are slightly stronger, and they seem to be very, very good. And I imagine Growspile Omnath, better threat somewhere, like the most efficient one from a jumpstart thing, is probably a recipe for success. So go out, get your Omnaths, and use code Would That Be Good to get 15% off your first order, and use code CCMTG for 4% off every order. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/CCMTG, and that way you can become a patron of the show. And one of the perks of being a patron of the show is you get to actually ask questions for the show. And this week's question is, how do you attack a one deck metagame? This seems very ethereal. You know, right now there's like a lot of decks people are talking about. There's 4-color Omnath, there's 4-color Omnath Stew, 4-color Omnath Salad. So there's a lot of different ones, but I guess we can pretend as if it was a one deck format right now, Allie, and talk about it. So, Allie, how do you go about it?
I think this is super interesting because we're kind of in the middle of this discussion with some of our friends in a Discord group right now.
Yeah, right before we logged on, it was pretty timely.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of ways to approach it, but I think I always tend to want to approach it as similar to how it was when Team Iraq was kind of just like the deck in Standard was, I think you just kind of need a Mirror Breaker and to really stop worrying about the other decks. And if you start seeing the other decks, I think it's safer to just like create a solid sideboard plan as opposed to adapting your main deck. Because I think I just want to tackle the mirror in any way possible because I'm just so much more likely to play that. So I want that edge in game one.
Yeah, I also think it matters a lot on where you are in the format's lifespan. So, like, right now, we're still technically in the early stages, right? The format's only been alive for just about a week now, right? It's been, like, 5 or 6 days. And with that information, people are still, like, coming around to Omnath being the, like, some people, like, you want to explore, right? Like, even if you think it is the best, you want to try and beat Omnath. We want to try and beat the best deck. So you're not going to see as much of the best deck as you will later. But normally, if the deck is that strong, your opponents are going to have a harder time actually combating it. So you get to hedge towards the mirror and do things like what I landed up on, which was like 4 Spikefield Hazard main as a way to like cheaply answer Cobras on the draw. That way you can develop your own Lotus Cobra. And then against the aggro decks, which are the only decks that can really punk you, a lot of their threats currently are still X1. So they might adapt that and eventually like trim the X1s that they don't really need to have more X2s so that we have to then change Spikefield Hazard. But if you can find a way to like win the mirrors that's reasonable against other decks, that's like a way to really, you know, get a huge edge. So I try to, like Ali, I've in the last little while, I recently adopted that you just kind of play the default most powerful thing week one and you make other people have to have the answers because it's much harder to have all your answers line up efficiently than it is to just figure out how to jam the most powerful thing. Now, it might end up that having the answers, there's a way to make them line up consistently, and it's actually better to do that than it is to be jamming. But that's a really tall ask for someone to figure out in the first, like, for example, if you were playing the Standard Challenge in the first 48 hours, right? Like, going into that, I think there might be a deck out there that can beat Omnath when it comes to, like, being a reactive deck. But I don't believe that that most likely someone figured out the perfect 75 in the first 48 hours and they're going to hit the matchup enough that their like gruel and mono red opponents won't kill them. Cause I think that's like a hard line to walk that you can, but it takes time. So at the start of the format, kind of with you, Ali, I want to like be as strong in the mirror as I can, be as proactive as I can. And then as things change in the format, I'm willing to like trim down on stuff like Genesis Ultimatums maybe that are like insane in the mirror bad against aggro and bring in things like Thunderous Rebuke which are good against aggro and good against the mirror, right? So that's kind of my opinion on it. Do you have any more thoughts on this, Ali? Anything on what I said?
No, I agree with you. It's I do like what you said that it's important to identify like where you are in the standard format, because I mean like we're technically just like the cards aren't even out in paper yet. It's kind of absurd that we're all kind of just like on this Omnath train, and I do think that people like still need time to see what can like I'm not a huge fan of just like, oh, something's been out a week, we have to like ban everything. Like, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. That's kind of a different conversation, but like I know it kind of like ties in. I know a lot of people are talking about that. And it's like, well, there's still time to actually like see and explore. There's probably a lot of decks that aren't even like thought of yet. So
yeah, and there's also a lot of things that decks can do to like make their matchup slightly better that just like hadn't really hit yet, right? Like, there's not articles talking about it. People are still like exploring stuff, and so yeah, I agree with that a lot. It takes some time. It might end up being that ultimately there should be something hit, but we should like focus on answering it for the moment. You know, it's fine to like have those conversations, but they're not very helpful. The other thing I wanted to say, and we kind of mentioned this already, but I think it's super important to mention, especially for like when Paper Magic comes back, keep this one in your back pocket, is I think it's super important to be ready for the weekend that you are playing and not in some ethereal space where everyone has all the information and we're on like a 90 chess. You know what I mean? Like, I think playing what's for what is known and what's sort of happening there is a good way to have good results. Now, there might be like some next level that I just haven't reached as a Magic player where you can like do that and kind of half step for the like ethereal plane, everyone knows what's going on, and maybe that's like an X factor I don't have. But what happened a lot of time, in my opinion, and what I've seen in my experiences, is that players will be like, well, you can't do this because of this, and because of that you can't do this, and because of that you can't do this. And so they end up in this kind of weird space with their Omnath decks that maybe is right in like 4 weeks. We don't know yet, but maybe it is. And they end up bringing that to the tournament. And what happens is, so their opponent plays like Edgewall Innkeeper, Rimrock Knight, Robber of the Rich, One Drop, Embercleave View, and they don't have Spikefield Hazard, because you don't need to answer Cobras, because it's bad if they hold their Cobra, right? And like they get into this weird like trick themselves play. So, and if you just had like a deal one, you would easily kill your opponent. So I would just focus on what's going on right now and try to adapt your deck regularly. I think that also makes Magic a little bit more, it's a little more work, but it's a little more fun too, because you're kind of changing the cards you're playing with, you're like, you know, you're being an active participant in the metagame, and you're, you know, moving along with everything, and you're not like stuck doing one thing, and you're not also super ahead doing some weird stuff. So that's kind of,
yeah, for sure,
kind of my take on that. Before we move on, we have another Patreon question, Allie. They wanted the official Chicken Nuggies power rankings. I feel like we have to save that for all of our patrons. But Allie, I'm going to hit you with the weird teaser. Not your favorite Chicken Nuggies, but your second favorite Chicken Nuggies. If they want to know the whole thing, they're going to have to become a patron of the show.
All right, my second favorite Chicken Nuggies.
That's right. So you got your favorite in your head? I don't want them to know
that. I absolutely know my favorite.
You got to guard that with your life. I'm going to throw mine out there while you're thinking. Chick-fil-A, second favorite. What's my actual favorite? Patreon.com/CCMTG. Find out.
God, I'm trying to think where else I get Chicken Nuggies, because like the one is just like A tier, or like S tier even. It's so good.
Yeah. So it's a hard one.
I think Buffalo Wild Wings. I've like transferred to just doing their like wings now, but I think their Chicken Nuggies are still good.
That's all right. All right. If you want the official Chicken Nuggies power tier rankings, that's why you go to us, patreon.com. We have standard decks and nuggies. That's the reasons. All right, let's hop into the main point of the show this week. We're going to be talking about standards, so it's going to probably, you know, relate to this Patreon question in a weird way, since the format is very focused and targeted on Omnath at the moment. And we should probably just start there, since a lot of our conversations are going to kind of be framed around this Omnath deck. So currently, the deck that a lot of people are afraid of, and like the boogeyman, the four-arm shadow over the format, is four-color Omnath. And this deck basically tries to play like Lotus Cobra on two and then cheat out an Omnath. And then it has a bunch of ways to draw cards and then a way to win the game. So some people use Terror of the Peaks to win the game. Some people use Felidar Retreat. Some people, use like just Kenrith, and they like try to grind them out a bit more. And then they use Escape to the Wilds and Genesis Ultimatum as a way to draw a bunch of cards. So you just kind of overwhelm your opponent with mana, and then you draw a bunch. And then you have Uro as another backup plan. Sorry, I forgot about that. That's how many layers this
deck has. How would you forget about Uro?
I think I side out Uro a lot. It's surprisingly not good in our deck, but it's still quite good because it's Uro. But yeah, Allie, what are your thoughts on this? This deck is quite strong in my opinion, but...
I have mostly just been playing different like Omnath decks, and it's to the point now I think everyone's just like debating which build of Omnath is correct and not, because I almost think like the different builds of Omnath are actually just different decks, which is weird to think about. But
yeah, I feel like Omnath isn't the focal point of the deck. It's just the thing that allows us to cheat a bunch of mana and like provides this weird like passive life gain that's super helpful to facilitate whichever way you want to win the game, right? Like it's like a engine piece, not so much like a expansion explosion or wilderness reclamation, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, it's very interesting. So like if you look at the standard challenge, in first place the deck that won has like four Omnath, a Beanstalk Giant, Kenrith, like one Terror of the Peaks, like very light on win conditions, and actually went way more up on interaction, almost as if like they were a little bit ahead. And so like they have two Fire Prophecies, four Thundering Rebuke. This is a common, so I guess I'll talk about it. It's one red sorcery, deal four to target creature or planeswalker. So it's very good as a way to like answer Omnath or answer a Lotus Cobra or answer a Terror of the Peaks. So the person who won the standard challenge, Telcal, I think that's how you say it, Telsa Cal. I'm not quite sure how you say that name. They were very much like a reactive deck that just used all the draw fives and the arrows. It's more of a controlling four-color shell. And then the incredibly handsome fourth-place player, who was the next best Omnath player in the event, Mason Clark. God, I'm sorry. Got a little red and botted there. He seemed to play his deck more in like a, I'm going to churn through my deck, combo kill you, I have three Terror of the Peaks. And that was kind of my plan, was, you know, I'm just going to draw a bunch of cards and I'm going to overwhelm you. Like, if you ever let one draw five resolve, I will probably find another draw five. That's how they kind of work. And I will just churn through my deck, and winning is trivial. I just need to keep presenting you with this, like, insurmountable board state, and Omnath and Uro will buy me enough time to get there. And so, yeah, I think that's like, two of the ways to do it. And then there's like the third way, which is like the Felidar Retreat deck that's kind of getting more popular right now, which kind of like is a hybrid of I'm going to interact with you more and I'm just going to make a bunch of land drops and use Felidar Retreat as the main win condition. And I still have all these backup threats. So I don't know. What are you feeling about stuff right now, Allie, when it comes to the Omnath deck? Like, do you like the churn through your deck? Do you like reacting more? Do you like that kind of the middle of the road plan? What are your thoughts?
Real quickly.
Hit me.
How do I get the Mason Clark to sign my Omnaths?
Well, you can P.O. box me, or you can wait for an event. I have a Sharpie. I don't have a Magic Sharpie. I didn't make the Pro Tour Finals. But I do have a Sharpie, and I will gladly sign your Omnaths or anything else you want. You know, babies, deck boxes, play mats. I'm happy to sign whatever you need, Allie. So you just let me know.
Perfect.
Yep.
I do think I've been liking the Omnath decks that don't, like, I don't really like the ones that have a bunch of the counter spells in the main deck. I think it's kind of distracting from the plan and, like, diluting the deck. I've been playing a lot of different versions, I think. I definitely like Kenrith. I think Kenrith is really powerful. I like the idea of just kind of, like, ramping as quickly as possible too with the extra cultivates. That's something I haven't tried, but I think I like. Mm-hmm. There's just like, it feels like every card is like a different decision. Like you have spots where it's just like guaranteed, right? Like you have four Lotus Cobra, you have four Omnath, you have four Genesis Ultimatum, which like maybe even four Genesis Ultimatum isn't the correct thing to do either. But
yeah, I feel like it's getting worse now that people are adopting more counter spells post board. Like, you're already kind of trimming them, and we're seeing, like, aggro decks tick up a little bit. But, yeah, I agree. It's wild. Like even in my deck, right, like, I was talking to Harlan before this started, and I had, like, Beanstalk Giant in the deck because Beanstalk Giant works really well with Terror of the Peaks, right? Like, it's a combo. It's big, and it does damage, and that does damage to their face deck building. And Harlan was not very big on Terror of the Peaks, and he was really big on Cultivate. And I kind of got sold on Cultivate makes sure that we always hit our fifth mana, right? And that's really important because our deck plays so many five drops. But I think if you go hard on Terrors, you need to go hard on Beanstalks. That's like a weird outlier part of my deck is that like I kind of strayed from that. And I kind of regretted it too. It's also like another way to win the game. It's like a backup plan. And so like it's kind of weird how we have packages, right? Because like if you have Cultivates, you really want Felidar Retreat because Felidar Retreat really rewards you for cultivating on three and then having those extra land drops as well later in the game. So it's a very interesting dynamic there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also like I know a lot of people don't like the one deck formats or like whatever, but I do think it's still in a cool spot where we're trying to figure out like what is actually the best way to build this deck, because again it's only been like a week, so I'm still really interested in each of the individual card choices, and I think these conversations are interesting until we figure out what is actually the best.
Yeah, it's also interesting too, like we haven't even really talked about the mana, but like certain people, like majors, think that the pathways might be a trap for the most part and that you just shouldn't play them. And that's like totally different than the things that have been going on. Like my deck list and the one that got first both played like eight pathways, I think. I think actually by the person they actually beat me in semifinals ended up winning. I think they played 10 pathways. I think they had more than me. Yeah, they played 10 and I had 8. So that's like a huge divergence, like a huge new camp propping up. So very interesting. Allie, let's talk about the sideboard for a second here, because this is kind of, I'm just going to talk about one thing, or actually two things, because this is something that comes up with people a lot. First, what are your thoughts on Confounding Conundrum? That's the one in blue enchantment, draw a card, and if your opponent plays an extra land, they have to pick up a land, for those that are new to that card.
Yeah, I think it is decent plus. I think to some extent, especially in multiples, it does actually hinder the opponent at some point, especially, I think I like it in the mirror, and I don't like any other deck to really play it, because you're not also, like, building a mana advantage also, right? So, like, mm-hmm. if you, like, play that, and then cultivate, and then play Uro, like, even the turn after that, and then your opponent is, like, almost forced to play, like, one land a turn, mm-hmm. and, yeah, so it can just, I've gotten it so it was to a point where, like, the opponent has, like, four mana, and I have, like, eight or something. So mm-hmm. I like it for that. I think it's not, I think it's actually, like, actively bad if you're not doing something like that or not establishing something on the board, because it's just, like, setting your opponent to, like, still do their game plan and not, like, pressure them in any way or kind of, like, make up for the fact that they're not ramping as much as you or something.
Yeah, it's not Stony Silence. It's a lot more like a way worse Kataki, right? Like, it slows them down, but it does not end the game. It's actually kind of interesting because when I finished the challenge on Sunday, I actually wasn't even bringing them in anymore. I just had stopped bringing them in the mirrors, because the way that decks were kind of configured, I didn't super like it, because I was playing through them pretty easily, and I felt like my opponents were as well. But what's kind of happened is we've seen, like, more Beanstalk Giants and more Evolving Wilds, and Conundrum is really good against Fabled Passage, and it's okay against Evolving Wilds, you know, like, these sort of things that enable Uro and, like, make extra land drops. But if you have Confounding Conundrum in play, your opponent's Beanstalk Giants are actually turned off. So as we see that card and those sort of things go up, I think this card gets a lot better. And I agree with everything else you said. I think if you're not an aggressive deck or this deck, you can't really play this card, which is kind of awkward. But if you're a control deck, they're just going to, you know, play their land slowly over time, and it shouldn't be a problem. So you need to have some way to win. Maybe those decks need to play Archons of Sungrace, and then this is an enchantment orc. I don't know. But yeah, I agree with what you said there. Other big thing, the spot of contention, the Bone Crusher Me Giant Daddy. What do you think? Some people love this card for the mirror. Some people love this card in the main deck. Some people love this card for aggro decks. What are your thoughts on the Bone Crusher Giant? I ended up playing four. I think the person who ultimately won the event had two. No, they had none. I'm just totally mistaken. Sorry. They had four Gargadoths and four Ugins in the sideboard. So, Allie, what do you think of Red Cat? I'm sorry, of Bone Crusher Giant?
I think Bone Crusher Giant is a solid card. I know a lot of decks have been switching to Spike Feed something.
Spike Field Hazard.
There we go. That one. Yes. And I think I'm more in line with playing that if I'm expecting to face a lot of mirrors, but I still think Bone Crusher Giant is fine in the mirror as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things too. We talked about, like, the choices matter a lot, right? Like, if you have Terror of the Peaks, you're a little more inclined to Bone Crusher Giant because it has, like, the ability to be a 2-for-1 against aggro decks. Like, the 4-3 body matters a lot there. But also, like, if you just have a Terror in play, it becomes, you know, like, a mini Thunderous Rebuke that you get to, you know, dome your opponent for, which comes up. Like, sometimes your opponent makes you trade a lot of resources and you just have a Terror of the Peaks in play and you start attacking and having a way to do extra damage. You know, this card represents 6 if you have the mana for it. That's a lot of damage, so yeah, I like this card in the sideboard as a plan for aggro decks. I really just want to, like, stock up on demanding turn 2 to be a pivotal turn, and I want to have things I can do off my Lotus Cobra with extra mana, and I think Bone Crusher Giant does a great job of that. So I've liked Bone Crusher Giant currently, but I could see where things change, and maybe I want to have more Thunder Tributes or Storm's Wrath and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's a card that we just kind of need to evaluate in the context of what's going on in the format a lot. Alright, I think that's going to probably handle it for now on the Omnath decks. I'm sure we'll talk about them in, you know, conjunction with these other decks, since the everything kind of spinning around it at the moment. But Allie, let's kind of talk about Mono Red. That deck got second and another top eight in the Standard Challenge, and I think it did okay in some other places. What do you think of Mono Red?
I think Mono Red is very bad. I think that's my hot take. I think Mono Red is garbage, and I think you should be playing Gruul instead if you're trying to play aggro.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, I was going to talk about Gruul next, so this is perfect. What do you hate about Mono Red, specifically in comparison to Gruul, which actually won the Bash Bros tournament and the Hooglandia tournament. So the two, like, big but, you know, not prestigious tournaments they did very well on.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of these red decks just, like, aren't doing anything powerful enough. And when they do get to a turn where they're doing something powerful, like playing Nanax or playing Embercleave or playing Torbrand, if they're playing that as well, it feels like it's just too late and the opponents are already, like, gained a million life because of Uro and Omnath, and it just seems that it seems like that is more attackable or, like, able for the opponent to stabilize or come back from than the Gruul deck. I guess overall, it just seems like Mono Red is not doing anything powerful.
Yeah,
if they are winning, it seems like it's just like an Embercleave cheese.
Yeah, I think I agree with that for the most part, and I think that Gruul wears Embercleave much better than Mono Red does, and so as such, like, having bigger bodies that, like, dodge things like Spikefield Hazard on average for the Gruul deck is a big up, and when you Embercleave, you, like, actually kill them right away. Where with Mono Red, sometimes you Embercleave them, and the new builds all play Akuma's Hellhound, and some play the new 1-1 with haste Fireblade Charger. So the deck has, like, 12 to 10 1-drops that only become, like, deal 2 to 3 damage, right, with Embercleave in play. And that sort of thing isn't not nearly as strong as, like, if you look at the Gruul deck. It has Edgewall Innkeeper and Rimrock. Edgewall Innkeeper is 1-1, sorry, but, like, and Lovestruck Beast to make a token, but the rest of the creatures are 2 power up the rest of the way. You know, you have Rimrock Knight, you have Robber the Rich, you have Questing Beast, you have Lovestruck Beast, you have Scavenging Ooze, you have Rada, you have Garruk's Harbinger. Just a bunch of things that if you Embercleave them, it will, A, break through an Uro, which is huge. Like, I've definitely just blocked with an Uro and they've Embercleave to, like, trade barely in Mono Red. And Gruul, it will always kill them, and sometimes it will live. So I think that's the big plus to me with Gruul is that you're just actually a good Embercleave deck. It's kind of crazy, actually, just how much more powerful Gruul is than Mono Red, considering the mana, I think, is significantly worse. This is my hot take, by the way, for Gruul. I'm curious, you've played the deck some. So the deck plays anywhere from 15 to 16 actual lands, and then plays a absurd amount of DFCs, like, some decks play the Mammoth as well, the three drop as the land. The one that won the Hooglandia, I'm sorry, the Bash Bros did not. But they do have 4 of the green mythic double face card and 3 of the red one. And I think if this deck takes up in popularity, while I love the mythic double face cards, I think in aggro deck specifically, they can't supplement land drops as hard as they are here. But as long as you're in an Omnath dominant world and other people aren't playing Gruul, I think this is fine. So what do you think, Allie?
Yeah, I really like the creature land. The
Mammoth?
Yeah, I really like the Mammoth. I think the Mammoth has been really good, actually. But yeah, like, I agree with what you were saying, that, like, the red creatures just, like, feel like they don't do anything. And when I'm looking at the Gruul list, like, all these creatures just seem, like, very good, minus Rimrock Knight. I hate that card, but if you're playing Edgewall Innkeeper, I think you just have to, or else you don't have enough adventure creatures. But yeah, I mean, like all these cards do something. I think even, like, if they're both playing cards like Robber the Rich, I think that's just also bettering Gruul, because Gruul seems like it has the ability to, like, actually cast the cards that you, like, are taking from your opponent without taking too much away from, like, your strategy too, because you're, like, an aggro deck, but you can also serve different functions. You can, like, fall back into a mid-range deck. You can be a little grindy with Edgewell Innkeeper and stuff. So I think you can even just, like, afford to, like, play your opponent's spells or, I don't know, just kind of, like, shift the game however you want or however you draw, which I think is something powerful that Mono Red has not and probably won't ever be able to really do unless you're playing like a big red deck. But
maybe that's the trick. Mono Red players just need to change what they're doing. Like, we can play all these one drops, but should we? It's probably an interesting question to have for sure. Allie, what do you think of the Sultai Control decks? That's the other sort of deck that's kind of popped up recently. We saw that Sultai Control actually got second in the Bash Bros podcast and tournament in the hands of Zach Allen, and then it got third in the challenge by Daniel Okos, who actually was my only loss in the Swiss. Yeah, just a lot of Sultai. Basically, it's the deck from the old format. For those that haven't seen it, it's like Uro, Threats, Answers, Planeswalkers. What do you think about that deck, Allie?
Yeah, I don't think it's very surprising to me that the deck that was the best deck in the last standard still has, like, some powerful things going on. It still has, like, a decent amount of the cards still legal, minus, like, Nissa, I think. So, I've tried a bit of this deck. It was, like, I looked at the deck list and it felt terrible. Kind of like the old Zaltai list. I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, why does this win? This looks terrible. And then it just keeps winning. So I'm sure it's good, but I'm not happy about it.
Are you not a fan of Dark Bargain? Zach played three Dark Bargains. For those of you out there that do know this, congratulations for the rest of you. It's three and a black instant. Look at the top three cards of your library. Put two of them in your hand and one in the graveyard, and then deal two damage to yourself. It's a Dominaria draft participant, and now standard participant. It's like a way to figure out stuff. Yeah, I assume it's just a way to hold up counter magic and have card draw that fuels Uro. It's, you know, it's just kind of cool. Yeah, it's interesting what these decks are doing. That, like, so Zach's the one that got second in the Bash Bros, actually way more answer heavy and way less on threats. Like, his only ways to win the game are Shark Typhoon, Ugin, Uro, and a Brazen Borrower. And I guess you could technically deck your opponent if they drew a lot of cards. Which is probably non-zero against the Omnath decks. The Omnath decks do have a problem where, like, they only have so many cards that win the game, but they draw so many cards that they force you to have answers every single turn. While O'Daniel here played a bunch of threats. There's two Ashiok, one Garruk, the Curse Huntmaster, one Ugin, one Brazen Borrower, two Elgaroth, one Scavenging Ooze, four Uros, four Shark Typhoon. So Daniel can close a game out while Zach is really sitting back and grinding. And I think that's an interesting dynamic on which one you're supposed to kind of lean towards, you know?
So what you're saying is we should play Crab and mill our opponents.
Are you talking about how I lost on ladder to the Omnath deck that played four crabs as their winning condition? Because that was annoying and powerful.
Yes.
0-3, surprisingly good. I actually think there might be something to that, by the way. Like, people have started playing Thunderous Rebuke, which is bad for Crab. But if people were only playing Hazard and Giant, I think Crab made a lot of sense. Because you just, like, had to have two kill spells to answer it, or Terror of the Peaks. And so, or an Ugin, I guess. But, like, you could, like, you put so many lands into play, you, like, actually mill your opponent out very quickly. It's very powerful. All right. No. I'm saying yes to that. Should we talk about Thick Omnath, or are we going to just, as a group, agree to not promote it because we don't like it? I'm letting you decide on air right now.
Is that just Yorion?
Yeah. Thick Nath. 80 cards.
I like it in Historic.
Nice. I'm scrolling. All right, the next kind of decks that I'm seeing pop up here and there, when it comes to the challenge, it's a lot of Omnath and Mono Red and that sort of stuff as you scroll down, various cards. But in the Bash Bros, we saw decks like Dimir Rogues do kind of well. Allie, what do you think of Dimir Rogues?
My, like, I don't know. I think the deck's fun.
Sure.
I think the synergies are super cool. I think, like, I think there is merit to saying that, like, oh, why are you playing mill in an Omnath format? But I also think that argument is kind of just lazy. Mm-hmm. I think there's, like, more to it than that. Is that...
Do you mean Uro, by the way?
Uro, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
What did
good.
I say?
You said Omnath.
Okay. Yeah, Uro.
Yeah.
Uro.
Uro.
Yeah, like, why are you playing that in an Uro format? But, I don't know. There's just a lot more to that. I think some of the mill cards are going in the correct direction, right? Like, the blue-black flash one where a rogue attacks opponent mills two is kind of a good way to start getting there because it's starting to actually play cards that do something. Like, it buffs your rogues. You can start to actually have a little aggression on the table, but I don't know. Because I think about the modern mill deck where it really doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had, I think I brought this up already in a previous podcast, but then they have Jace's Phantasm. And then suddenly the deck did something. It had a way to end the game. And I think the standard deck is kind of starting to do that, where it has like actual good creatures that can attack for points of damage and not just sit there and mill your opponent, because that's never going to work. But
yeah, it's interesting. Did you see that Modern Mill won the challenge? Because now they have the new crab as well. So now you have 8 crab.
Okay.
I'm going to start calling the deck. If I told you that 8 crab won the challenge, you're way more likely to play it, right? Than if I told you no one. Like, if I was like, yo, did you see 8 crab? You're like,
crab in. Tribal.
Yeah. Crab mindset when it comes to crab decks. I agree with what you said there, for sure. I think Rogues is probably not the greatest deck in the world right now, but maybe if things work out well, it will get better. I also think that from the way it looks, I think we're going to get a lot of party support over the next year. And while I expect a lot of the rogue support to be in this set, just from the way, like, we're going to Keldheim, which seems like a warrior world, right? Then D&D world probably has a lot of clerics and stuff. So I would expect that... it's going to probably have a lot of wizards. And then Innistrad will probably have a lot of clerics, right? I expect this to be the bulk of our rogue support. But maybe as time goes on, we can fill this deck out. So it's going to be interesting. Allie, this is awkward. So when it comes to results, we've kind of talked about every deck. There's really only those 4 decks as of right now. There are cards that I kind of like, but before I talk about those cards, are there any decks that you've liked while playing ladder or seen played that you want to talk about?
No.
Word. That's fair. I don't have any either. All right. This is where I'm at, though. Then you tell me what you think about this. These are the 3 cards that I think are... probably good against... here are 2 cards that I know are good against Omnath and 2 that I think are pretty good. And I'm curious what you think. So Mystical Dispute and Thunderous Rebuke, I think, are 2 cards that need to see more play if we're going to keep the Omnath decks at bay. Would you agree with that? Thundering Rebuke is the deal 4, by the way. I know that that one's still newer for people at home.
Do you not just play Red Cap Melee at that point?
So I think that's an interesting point of conversation. I don't know, because one of the things I like about Thundering Rebuke is that it does hit Cobra as well if you're on the play. Now, if you're on the draw, I'm sorry, it lets you hit them on the play or the draw. I misspoke there, sorry. And it does make you lose a land like Red Cap Melee does. And a lot of times I feel like I do want to answer the Cobra just so that they don't, like, play their things ahead of schedule. And then I'm, like, answering the Omnath and they play another land and they're, like, you know, escaping from the wilds and doing that sort of thing. So I think that's just a card that, like, the Gruul decks and the red decks should all adopt main deck because it's good in the mirrors, right? Like, it kills Questing Beast. It kills just, like, the various big creatures that Gruul plays. It kills the Mammoth, for example. But it also snags a lot out of Omnath. But I think that maybe you should play Red Cap Melees in the sideboard as well. I don't know. Does that check out to you? Does that seem like malarkey? What do you think?
Yeah, I think I can agree with that more.
All right, word. Mystical Dispute seems great. I think if you're playing a control deck, you have to play 4 Mystical Disputes. You just have to be able to attack these sort of things. And I think in the sideboards of blue deck, you just have to have the option for this. Even if it's just to hit their Mystical Disputes when they go for a spell. Or to try and hit your thing, I think it's pivotal. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think Mystical Dispute's great.
All right, chat. We've got Allie in a yes-yes mode. Are you ready for this? So we got Ashiok's Eraser. Ashiok's Eraser is a 2 blue-blue enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you exile target spell, and then your opponent can't cast that spell for the rest of the game. So it's an enchantment counterspell that Ixalan's Binding is the spell you cast. So here's my genius or grifter idea, Allie, is that the Omnath deck has only 5 cards that you actually care about. There's the 2 draw 5s, Uro, Omnath, and then whatever their other backup win condition is, and there's probably a Kenrith. And so my plan is to Ashiok Eraser everything except Kenriths and then kill Kenriths on the spot with ECDs. Yeah? Off genius it. Or grifter. All right, cool, no doubt. Yeah. I was just kidding. Yeah. All right, hang on, let me delete this out of my article for this week real quick.
I just don't want to be holding up mana in this deck unless it's a Mystical Dispute or Negate, I think.
Sure, that's fair. Alright, yeah, my genius or grifter idea culminates at playing Is It Control or maybe Jeskai, where you have like Rebukes, Disputes, and Ashiok's Eraser, but maybe that's just not proactive enough. I will say I've played a game of Ashiok's Eraser on Ladder just to see how it would go. And oh, there's Teemer Clover. We forgot to talk about that deck. I just played against this deck. I think Teemer Clover's fine. Allie, do you have any thoughts on Teemer Clover?
Yeah, it's fine. I think it can definitely beat the Omnath decks. I think it can also just like lose to it. You just have to I don't know. I think the deck's boring.
Yeah, it's kind of just a mid range deck that I think you have to play 4 Mystical Disputes to main deck if you're gonna play that deck. So, but I played against them and I Ashiok Eraser their adventure creatures. And I was like, aha, they can't Brazen Borrower my Ashiok Erasers anymore. And what I forgot to realize is that Petty Theft isn't the name of the card, even though it's on the card. And then I got blown out later. It was not a fun time. Either way, last card that I think maybe could see play is Archon of Emyria. This is 2 and a white for a flying 2/2 creature that players can only cast one spell each turn. So the idea here is kind of just like before with the counter spells and stuff. We play this and then we just answer everything one at a time. What do you think?
Sorry, what was that?
What do you think? It's just a silence, basically. Like, you can only play, or not silence, but like a one spell per turn card. An Aether Swarm Canonist. Mm. And then you counter their thing. So they're like, bang, and you're like, bang.
It's like something you have to be like ahead, right? Like, you play an Omnath, yeah. And then play that, and then counter their thing.
All right. That's why I was in the Genius or Grifter category. That's fair. I do think maybe Winota decks, that those are things, should play this. Because that, even against other decks, that lets you like kind of pull really far ahead with your Winota triggers. And then they have to like answer stuff one at a time.
But yeah, I think that makes sense if you're playing like that kind of deck where you can like essentially throw down your hand, play that, and then just like play Winota.
Yep.
And then they die.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, that's going to do it, I think, for this week's episode. Allie, do you have any closing thoughts on Standard before we dip?
I think if you want to actually beat the Omnath decks, you can play a better Omnath deck or play Gruul. I was 7-1 against Omnath. It felt really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of room to explore in Omnath. I think the aggressive decks, if they start doing things like playing main deck Thundering Rebuke for the mirrors and for the Omnath decks, are going to get very successful. And I really like that sort of direction. And I think that's a way to force the Omnath players to get less greedy. And when the Omnath players get less greedy, I think we open up the opportunity to talk about playing reactive decks. But right now, I think you're basically an Omnath deck or a proactive deck. I'm not super high on playing a bunch of counter spells and stuff at the moment. At least I haven't seen a configuration that's, you know, going to do that successfully. Except, of course, for Ashiok's Eraser, it's busted. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of Constructive Criticism. Allie, if someone wants to find you, where can they go?
You can watch me stream at twitch.tv/mythic_amiibo or Twitter @mythicamiibo.
You can find me each and every week doom scrolling on Twitter at twitter.com/MasonEClark. And then you can find me on twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all next week for another episode of Constructed Criticism.